This talk was recorded at Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society in Los Angeles and is freely offered for your enjoyment. For more information, please visit againstthestream.org.
Matthew and I were talking about a theme for this evening, and the topic that we wanted to illuminate or discuss, explore, was the theme of authenticity and convention. And I was thinking about ways of just sharing a little bit about what this might mean for each of us and how to practice with it. And so I thought, I'm staying with Joanna in her lovely house with her lovely family, and she has animals. And there's a house rule that the dogs are not allowed on the couch. And the dogs know that rule applies when Joanna is around. But they don't know that that rule applies when I'm around. So I'm a guest in the house, and I know that that's the house rule. And I see the dogs on the couch, and then what do I do? You know, so here you have a circumstance where you're familiar or you're exposed to a convention. It's the house rule. And then one has to find one's own personal relationship with it. How do you relate to that? And this very simple example we can see happens in all of our relationships. It happens in our relationship with our children and our parents. It happens with our partners. It happens with work. It happens with the codes of conduct about driving. You know, polite behavior and not polite behavior. There's all kinds of conventions that we're having to interact with every day as a human being. It has to do with the way we relate to our own body. You know, what we see and experience and how we perceive that, and whether it's the way we think it should be or shouldn't be. And yet, the richness for me is not so much in understanding the rule, but of watching what happens when I come in contact with it and how I feel about it and how I'm able to stay present in my own body and heart and navigate what needs to be navigated as I make whatever decisions I need to make. So the dogs were on the couch and I saw them and I knew. They knew that I didn't know that that was the rule. So they were trying to see how much they could get away with me being around. But being a guest in the house, once I know that that's the rule, it feels like part of what I can do to help support the house is help maintain those conventions. So when I asked the dogs to leave, I could notice if there was a sense of any flavor of humor or bossiness or righteousness or being miffed that they're trying to pull the wool over my eyes when they know very well that they're not supposed to be on the couch. And whatever kind of subtle nuance arises in my own heart, right there is where I can practice how I'm relating to what's arising. Okay. So that's a fairly simple and fairly innocuous example, and I don't know that anyone would find this tremendously controversial, though I'm sure there could be quite a discussion about just this, yeah? But let's go to the opposite spectrum, the opposite end of the spectrum. I am a Theravadan bhikkhuni. I have 311 precepts. I have been ordained in a tradition that's 2,500 years old. In addition to the 311 precepts, there's all kinds codes of conduct and etiquette and protocol that are suitable for a monastic. And it takes a long time to learn what these are. And then when one learns what they are, then it's a longer time in learning how to relate to them. So last Monday I was talking about having left England and coming to this country. And some of just a tiny little bit of the context around that. And a kind of a sense of a longing for an evolution to take place where some of the things that I came out of are no longer replicated, and many of the things that I have learned are honored. So here we have another perspective of this question, which is that there's a lot of convention, there's the essential teachings and codes of conduct that the Buddha laid out, there's cultural interpretations, and there's a whole host of views and opinions about what you are or you're not supposed to do when you're a Buddhist nun or a Buddhist monk. And yet the fundamental question remains, how do you relate to convention with authenticity? What is the right relationship? Now, for myself, it's multi-layered. It is really important to know the basic precepts, to know all the rules and to understand what they are and to understand how to live them skillfully. It's also really important to understand the time and place where some of them have a context that are more important to apply than others. You know, for example, just as a simple one, we're supposed to eat at midday, before midday, finish by midday. Now, if I'm surrounded by a community of people who are coming from this tradition, it's very disturbing if they see me eating after midday. And I know that. But, for example, in the circumstance that I was in today, Joanna was needing to take her daughter to school, and we had some other things to do, and by the time we got back and everything was finished, it was slightly after midday. And so it's a constant navigation of how do one hold the conventions in the time and place of what's arising where it feels appropriate as well as respectful. So in my own personal circumstance, one of the ways that I navigate this is the sense of ease and well-being I have with what happens when I trust my intuition as opposed to just following the rule. What is the sense of ease and well-being that will happen around me? So if I were to do this in a one setting, that would cause chaos. And in another setting, it would cause relief. So my own interpretation of how to relate to the convention is partly based on my intuitive assessment of the result of my choices, which comes after years of living this life. So there's time and place, which is contextual. And then there's a sense of ethics. You know, is it actually immoral to eat a few minutes after 12? Well, it's a convention that we have adopted that serves a certain purpose that was useful and is useful. But it's not immoral to eat after 12. It's just a convention that we've agreed that that's what we will do. And so there's a sense of, well, you know, this is where it sits in me and I can have some ease about it. But because I have agreed to this standard, then I have to be careful the times when I make the decision not to do that. And because that is my standard, then I need to take care that I am honorable about acknowledging it in a suitable time and place when that's what's called for with the other bhikkhunis and other sisters. So there's a way of holding convention, understanding time and place, being honorable about the agreements one has made, and yet being flexible. in the situation. For me, the word authenticity is a very important word for me. When I feel authentic, I feel that's a good thing. And when I don't feel authentic, I really feel a sense of recoiling and looking very carefully about what has happened that allows me to feel that. Why am I inauthentic in this circumstance? And I know that I can feel inauthentic when I'm adopting a persona about how I think I should be, and I'm not actually connected with what I'm feeling. I know I can feel inauthentic when I am trying to please or trying to win respect from other people. I know I can feel inauthentic when I'm not being honest about what's actually going on. And instead of being honest with what's actually going on, I am trying to be with what I think should be going on. And so there's a gap between the reality of what's happening and the way I think it should be happening. And that gap has the ability to bring a sense of inauthenticity. And that inauthenticity for me is something that I recoil from. And I want to find a way to bring clarity and honesty to the circumstance so that I don't need to feel that. One of the ways in which my own personal practice has navigated this territory, whether it's dealing with my furry friends on their couch, are these rather enormous issues of navigating. How does one allow for essential principles to stay intact and for something to move in accordance with what feels suitable for a contemporary time and place? Is the ability to empty out any identification with who I think I am, any view that I have, any solidifying around a perception about how things are supposed to be, and come into a place of stillness. And that stillness then is able to allow the intelligence of knowledge, of memory, of circumstance, of history, of cultural context, of time and place, to inform my decision-making process. Through emptying out, then I'm incredibly, the ground is cleared to make it more possible to be responsive to what's happening in the moment. So even with the dogs, you know, any slight sense of posturing around, well, this is my duty because I'm a guest in the house, I can pick that up. And then learn how to respond to that. So I don't need to impose any more shoulds upon myself once there is the recognition of what's there. But there is the ability to respond with care and kindness and gentleness in the way that Matthew was suggesting our meditation needs to be supported and resting and driven by, not a desire to get or to get rid of. So whether it's something that's small or something that's enormous, the basic principles of practice and meditation support through both. And the familiarity and the comfort with understanding what this is to relax in one's body and feel one's body, feel one's groundedness or lack of groundedness, to feel the wanting to know, wanting to be certain, wanting to have an answer, to learning what it feels like not to know, not to be certain, not to have an answer, and to trust in that space to allow what needs to emerge so that clarity about the right way forward will come. I remember I was speaking with a family that had been connected to the monastery for decades. So the husband and wife had five kids, and all of the kids had had effectively been born in the monastery. What I mean by that is they were so close by that they would come to the monastery for baby blessings and for birthday celebrations and for graduation ceremonies, and they came when members of the family died and different things. And I remember talking to the dad, and one of his daughters was a teenager, and he was saying, you know, she's a teenager, she's pushing, and she's pushing against the boundaries, which is what she needs to do. And I'm the dad, and I'm holding the boundaries, because that's what I need to do. And together we've got this dance going back and forth, and he felt totally peaceful that everything was completely fine and in order, that each one was doing exactly what they needed to be doing in that situation. And I think part of the peacefulness of that was the sense of suitability of time and place and non-identification and non-attachment. And the combination of the two, it seems like it's a mind bender. Like, you can't be suitable unless you're attached. It's the opposite. You can't be suitable and appropriate unless you're non-attached. But non-attachment doesn't mean disassociation or disengagement. It means being very present, but present in a way where our attention is suffused in our body and our heart, rather than grasping onto our thoughts. So I just wanted to start this off as a kind of like, here we are, this is the topic, and see where we go with it.
Thank you. So I'll just add a few words. So there's the Dhamma and the Vinaya, the Vinaya, the code of conduct that Amma referred to, and the Dhamma, the teachings, and the code, the Vinaya. And the quote that came to mind was from Ajahn Chah, who said, the Dhamma is all about letting go. The Vinaya is all about clinging. And when you figure out how those two things go together, you'll be all right. I don't know how those two things go together. But I'll reflect a little. If you looked at my life from the outside, you would think that dude follows a lot of rules. More rules than are on the books, for sure. But deep down, even though I follow all of those rules, I'm an anarchist. Conventions are here to support us. They're here to support us. The precepts and whatever ethical commitments we make in our lives, whatever routines and schedules and structure we try to implement in our life, this is all here to support us. So from that perspective, these forms and conventions are a way of creating a life that leads to more peace in ourselves and in others. And there can be times when it becomes clear that it's appropriate to put that convention, a particular convention, down. because it's actually impairing the expression of love. And it's a tricky situation because it's easy to rationalize letting go of some principle or convention or rule as an expression of our own greed or aversion, right? So we say that, oh, that's just convention, I'm going to put that aside. But actually, that's really just our way of wanting to act how we act and still think of ourselves as morally pure, right? So sometimes we break rules and we rationalize it in a way. And this is something, a pattern that I try to be alive to in my own life. And so I joked about being an anarchist, but the rules we choose to follow and not follow, it's important to look inward, like what is our intention here? So that's one thing, but ultimately, conventions are empty. That they're a kind of artificial supports that are conducive for the cultivation of the heart. But we can actually get so fixated on convention that we forget what it is, what it's made of, and why it exists. And there are times when we've looked inwards, we see some issue, we see some problem with the conventions of our time, we see a rule that we will not follow, and we look inwards to see, like, do I want to break this simply out of my own wish for more, my own push and pull, or is it clear that this convention is not actually impairs the expression of the heart? Rules are meant to facilitate the expression of the heart, but sometimes they impair it. And when this is the case, we are free to step out of that convention, to challenge it in the way Amma has challenged some conventions. So this is the rules in a certain respect are a way that we can actually find our own authenticity. And then maybe they've served their purpose, and we can relax the grip on the rules and trust that the heart will follow all of the important rules. The heart will follow all of the important rules.
You have just listened to a podcast from Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society. If you'd like to make a contribution to help support these teachings, please visit againstthestream.org.